You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it. Hey everyone, welcome to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. My name is Susan Dene, and we are talking about emotional recovery in the raw today. And I'm very passionate about this topic. I believe there's all types of facets in life in which we can all heal and overcome different obstacles. Today's show, we're talking about something that each one of us has experienced. I am positive of this. This is something that has consequences of depression. It can cause sleep disturbances, cognitive decline, impaired immunity. It can contribute to an increase in Alzheimer's with our older generation, and it significantly contributes to suicide, which we have seen increased rates in different age ranges over the last couple of years. So what is this one thing that we're talking about today? We're talking about loneliness and how that kind of takes over and really can do some damage on an individual. The reason why I'm excited about this show today is, although, you know, I can do shows on my own, but it is a much more pleasant experience when I've got somebody to talk about such a difficult topic with, but also someone who has invested significant amount of time in this area, and not only invested time in the area, but has done the work to help find solutions for individuals. And that is very dear to my heart. And this is Luke Wall. Luke Wall is the founder and director of Only 7 Seconds. This is a foundation that is dedicated to helping those who are suffering from loneliness. And Luke, I'm going to allow you just to give you a moment here before I jump into how we met, to kind of give an overview of what Only 7 Seconds is about. And then we'll just jump in because I know the show's just going to fly by today. I'm super excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that introduction, Susan. I feel like I don't even have to talk. You just spewed all the statistics already. You just teed it up so beautifully. You know, it's funny. You introduced me as the founder, but I do have to give credit where credit's due. The organization started with my mom. A little over 3 years ago, I have a younger brother who is almost 12 years younger than I am. And he went through a period of extreme loneliness after some physical health challenges. He was unexpectedly bedridden in high school for about a month. And during that time, a lot of his friends and family, myself included, didn't take the time to reach out to him. We didn't take the time, and there were, you can give any excuse in the world from Netflix to social media to just out of sight, out of mind. It never came from a place of not caring, but it was just lack of intentionality. And that loneliness led to depression, led to other mental health challenges that he experienced. And about 3 weeks into that, my mom got pretty frustrated. And she goes, how long does it take for someone to reach out and make a meaningful interaction or a connection with someone? How long does it take for you to pick up your phone and send a text that says, I care about you, or how are you doing, or dial a phone number and hit send? And if you do any of those things, it takes about 7 seconds out of your day. And so that's where this started from. And from there, we've grown as an organization, we kind of have caught lightning in a bottle, if you will, around the conversation of loneliness, especially with COVID. Loneliness is really starting to come to the forefront of a lot of public discussion and discourse, especially in the research community. The U.S. Surgeon General right now wrote a book, actually, funny enough, right before COVID hit, about loneliness. And he, at the time, said it was the greatest health crisis that we face as a nation. And the research is really starting to prove that out. And you listed out a number of those things at the beginning of the show where we've seen both firsthand and anecdotally in our own personal lives as staff and board members at our organization. But the research is showing out too how loneliness is playing a really significant role in people's both mental and physical health challenges and life experiences that we have.
Yeah. God, so many things are going through my mind right now. I'm trying to pick up which one I want to hit on. One, I want to say, You know, as your mom was having that moment of expression, you know, how long does it take is, you know, 7 seconds. What was really, the whole story is fabulous, but the inspiration, the thing that popped in my head when you were sharing that was you had to hear the message in order to implement the action to start helping people. Mm. And isn't it true, those things that are most dear to our hearts, which can be family especially, or when we truly individually experience something, that it resonates so much, it's deeper. It resonates deeper with us to the point of where, you know, you took something and she took something that was personally impacting your lives and have created solutions for, I can't even imagine the number of people that you've helped. I can't even imagine. You know, that actually is a great segue for me of how you and I met. That was Mother's Day weekend. And yeah. I was on the other side of the mountains. We're both in Washington State. And I was over in the Lake Chelan area, which is where you are, you know, everybody enjoying some sunshine on the east side of the mountains. I'm there with my 3 teenage daughters. So let's talk about being a mom connecting with teenagers. Well, you know, I mean, I think I was having this vision or this memory the other day about, I think there's a book out there or something titled, you know, I Hate You, But Will You Take Me to the Mall? And, you know, and I'm personally, I've experienced some of that, and, you know, and as much as I'd like to think, oh, you know, not very much of that, but I've got 3 of them, right? 3 daughters. And so we're sitting here at Mother's Day weekend. We go over to Lake Chelan. We're sitting on the benches, you know, we had packed some lunches with us and we're just sitting here talking and, you know, they're doing whatever they're, you know, and all of a sudden this little adorable boy walks up to us. It's the cutest blonde hair and he hands us sidewalk chalk. Now I got to tell you, What you didn't know, but some of my daughter, they love to draw. They're very artistic. The 2 of them are constantly putting in front of me different artistic, you know, really fantastic natural drawings. And so he hands us this chalk and all of a sudden we start to have an experience as a family where we're cooperating or one person's got the flower petal and the other person's got the other color of chalk. And then pretty soon we have to hand it off. And now we've got this topic to discuss. And this was your son, Gideon, and you had sent him over, or maybe he went on his own. I don't know. Cause you know, once you're in the family and you're doing this, right. Yeah. But you had provided what I think is on your website. And I'll let you talk about the impact of connection and being, yeah, you know, intention behind that. And that's what happened for us today. And so then obviously I was interested, you know, what is this? I saw your guys' stand over there, what you were doing that day. And then of course that starts getting me wanting to ask questions, and which is, you know, here we are. So yeah. So if you'd like to share a little bit about the connection and really, you know, some of the core of what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such remarkable and serendipitous timing for us to connect, because we were only there for 2 hours that day. And it was in commemoration of our 3-year anniversary. Officially, we've been an organization for 1 year now, but really the founding idea and when we really started to do a couple of little things around this idea was 3 years ago. And so we were recognizing it that day, going out to the park. And a big part of what we do is simply just advocacy and awareness. And that is things like being on a show like this and just talking about loneliness and breaking down some of the stigmatism that goes along with it, and just helping people better understand it, both in themselves and in the world, and what do we mean by loneliness, and being able to recognize it. And so that's a big part of what we do. And then a big part of it is also just community engagement. And so when we're out there in the community at an event like that, where we host a booth, sometimes they're self-run, sometimes we go to farmers markets, to we've been in parades, to funny enough, we've grown big enough, which is just crazy to talk about, that we have people on a military base in Qatar, exactly halfway around the world from where we're at right now, that were doing seminars on resiliency last weekend, right? And wow. So we've had all of these various pieces of outreach and community awareness and advocacy work. And in that instance, I didn't even know that that's what ended up transpiring, right? Like, I didn't know that that helped maybe bridge a little bit more connection with your daughters, either between themselves or with you and them in that moment. But part of the reason we handed out sidewalk chalk is we would have people that go and write just a message on the ground for any number of hundreds of people that walk that ground in the next couple of days, to read a message that encourages them to either make a connection, to impact their mental health, to encourage them, to provide hope, And any number of those things help address this feeling of loneliness. Mm-hmm. And so it is partially that, but it also is to inspire activities like that, where you can do it with someone that you care about. And so that's one small element of what we do. And you can go to our website and we can dive into any other aspects, but at a real high level, we do advocacy and awareness. We just this last year piloted a school and youth program that helps train and equip youth, mostly ages 6th to 12th grade, to make more meaningful, intentional connections in their spheres of influence.
That is fantastic. You know, the so part of my story, whether you've listened in or anything, but so part of my story is I'm a recovered alcoholic and drug addict, sober. It'll be 21 years next month. So But one of the things that we really focus on in recovery is the, you know, there's a promise that we say in some of the work that we do, and that the loneliness and self-pity will disappear, and the sense of belonging will return. And a lot of that is with learning how to connect with individuals and be part of, that's why, you know, recovery groups can be so powerful. And the same thing that you're doing, you know, bringing this awareness to people and talking about what's going on the inside, you know, as I was telling you, sharing with before the show, and I sent you an updated outline and I said, you know, oh, I'm so sorry that, you know, I got excited. I started doing all this research, but there is so many, so much to learn about loneliness. And I think it really does serve a large number of people. And one of the things that I was looking at, and it reminded me of recovery, was the definition of internal loneliness, which essentially means that, you know, being lonely doesn't mean that you're by yourself, but it's the perception of being lonely. And I know in my past, or in, you know, people that I've worked with, or what we hear sometimes in recovery is, you know, and I'm sure you've got numerous stories around this, where I'm standing in a crowded room and I feel completely alone.
It's funny. When I was starting to wrap my mind around this a year and a half ago as an organization and trying to understand loneliness, and really try to define it and understand the science and the research behind it, for me, it hit home when one of a close friend of mine sent me a message and he said, "Hey, I know you're looking into loneliness," and this came across my desk. And for some reason, he was on YouTube and he found an old video of Billy Graham. And if you know Billy Graham, I mean, he's one of the most well-known speakers and preachers of the last century. And he talked about, and this is in the 1970s, he was on the, what was the popular late night show in the 70s? I can't remember what it's called.
Anywhere from Carson to...
The Daily Show, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He was featured on the Daily Show. And Carson's sitting there asking him, he goes, "What is the number one thing that you hear most?" Because Billy Graham talks to everyone. He talked to every range of different demographics and personalities and life experiences. And he said, "What do you hear more often than most? And what's the biggest challenge facing people today?" And Billy Graham goes, "Loneliness." This is in the 70s. And he goes, and then he goes on to say, he goes, "I know loneliness." He goes, "I am surrounded by people all day, every day that want my attention. I am in crowds all day, every day, but I'm lonely." Mm-hmm. And so to your point of crowded loneliness, every time I hear that little spiel that he did with Carson Daly back in the 70s, right? Like that's, you know, that's 50 years ago. And just now it's taken us 50 years to get to a point where we're really having meaningful conversation around this topic and trying to find some solutions.
Yeah, trying to find solutions. And so when you think about for your organization and for your foundation, what you guys do and your efforts for connection, what have you found over the time that you've been doing this? Like some of the activities that you guys participate in or you create actually that help to increase that connection? Like what are some, like if, and I'm not, some, you might have tips on like what people can do just on their own. I'm sure you do. But what are some things that you guys do to increase the connection?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because we talk about this like two sides of a coin, right? Where Susan, you've experienced loneliness, and yet everyone that you know has experienced it too, right? And so whether you're the person that is experiencing loneliness right now, or you're the person that's not experiencing loneliness, but you want to help be a part of the change, the answer is really the same. And it is you being intentional to have meaningful, intentional connections with someone else. If you really pull back all the layers, right, get rid of all the frills of like sidewalk chalk to advocacy campaigns to school programming, all of that leads back to our mission is inspiring intentional connections, right? And that is the crux of addressing loneliness. That's really where it starts. And so you talk about in those moments that you may have felt lonely, the times that you had someone that you maybe cared about or that cared about you that reached out and checked in on you or that surrounded you with support or that didn't, right? You're going to either feel less lonely or more connected, right? And that's really kind of the antithesis. And so that's where a lot of our work has been is on this. How do we inspire people to create a lifestyle change, if you will, on living a life that is intentionally connected? Because it's not something, it's like a habit where it's really easy for us to scroll through life, quite literally, flip on Netflix, but it takes us building habits to say, all right, I'm going to build in time in my day that I'm going to send a 7-second text, or I'm going to build time in my week this week where I'm going to connect with an old friend. I'm going to take time this week to have some sort of meaningful or intentional connection with someone.
I think that is huge. So the thing I like to do, and the reason why I love doing this show and even coaching one-on-one or working with women in recovery, is because I love to look for the unseen inhibitors of somebody's emotional growth. And what I mean by that is sometimes we have gone so long living in a habitual way of sadness or what feels like a darkness, some will label it a depression, which it could be, it can get up to that level of significance, that we don't even know we're doing it. Nor have we gotten to sometimes we've gotten so mired down in the emotionalism of the situation or what we've deemed to be negative circumstances that we don't know that what we're feeling is loneliness. Like we haven't identified it as loneliness. A recent story of working with someone, when we peeled back the layers of, how was your weekend? And it was okay. I had plans and they fell through. And then as the story went on, there was like this feeling that was lasting throughout the weekend that she just wasn't worthy of company. Right. And what we circled around to was exactly what you just shared. And that was setting an intention. And I'll say taking some responsibility when we're able to shift that and change that story. So if the plans to hang out fall through, what is plan B? What is plan C? And are we paying attention to whether or not we're going down that dark rabbit hole of unworthiness? And I think as I was looking into this and I was also reading up about you and I think you have a passion for adolescence. And I have that passion. Like I said, I've got three teenage daughters, and I've helped raise six children, including these three. So I've been a lot of teen years, and there's a lot of uncomfortableness. And then I've witnessed the women that I'm working or have been working with, specifically probably over the last 5 years, are in the perimenopause, menopause. The puberty in later years that don't give you many benefits really, and learning, but it's a new identity, and that can feel very lonely. And then the third one that I've witnessed personally over the last 2 years was when my dad died of COVID and my elderly mother, who's 81, and watching her having to take on a new environment and acclimate and has signs of early memory loss, right? And so, but the level of loneliness can really pull on your heartstrings. And what you're talking about, that 7 seconds, just 7 seconds. Who do you know that you think could use some company? Who do you know that is a, and sometimes, and I'll just put this out because it's my experience with the women I work with, who is a you know, somewhat older woman. When I say older, I just mean 40s, 50s, kind of lived life, raised kids, and now they're single. And are they feeling lonely? I mean, I personally had created a sobriety potluck at my house once a month. I've been doing this, so I think they always give me a hard time. I think it's 9 or 10 years, but wow. But I did that because I was working with so many women, and the common theme was I'm having a hard time getting connected.
Yep. Yeah. It's a couple of thoughts on that is to give you some statistics to back up your anecdotal experience of youth right now, Gen Zers are the loneliest demographic right now. 8 in 10 roughly report to be lonely regularly or often. And then elderly are the second loneliest, 65 plus. And someone recently said it kind of is shaped like a U when you look at demographics of like the loneliest people. But in our anecdotal experience as an organization, the third loneliest demographic is middle-aged women. That's what we've experienced a lot of as well. And I don't have any statistics to back that up, but I see exactly what you're saying. And I think that we've seen that played out a lot as an organization. One thing I would like to say, especially on the youth front, but I think it's true across all demographics, is the impact of loneliness resulting in suicide is real. And it oftentimes is the people that you think are the strongest, the people that you think have it all together. It is the people that are supposed to have it all together. And the strongest people oftentimes have the hardest time being fragile and admitting that they're experiencing anything. And that's a lonely place to be. And so even though that might be a U shape in the sense of age demographic, no one's immune to it. Single moms in their 20s, my wife raising 3 kids and not having a moment to herself, that's a lonely life experience right now, right? But the strong people are oftentimes the ones that are loneliest, and the people that you would least expect. And so that's why, again, not to over promote, I didn't even realize I was wearing the same shirt as my background.
Fantastic.
Taking 7 seconds to check in on the people that you like, you have the people in your life that you know are likely lonely, whether it's your grandparents or your parents. But sometimes the strong people are just as lonely, and in taking that time to be intentional with even the strongest people in your life is really, really important.
That totally resonates with me. And I 100% can see that, because what I think is when we are confident and we get a lot of things done, I always compliment the women in recovery, because I've seen so much courage and so much strength and so much ability to get things done. And sometimes that to-do list, you do, and all these things are getting checked off. And then suddenly there's an experience where, does anybody really know what's going on with me? I personally recall when my dad was passing, and there was so much going on. It was in October of 20 and COVID numbers were through the roof, and I was, you know, 1500 miles away, and my kids are here and I'm there. And there was so much going on, the bathroom flooded when he was in the hospital. And then we engaged in a construction. I mean, there was so much going on. Right. And so I would call home, and I've got a pretty strong support network, but I would, you know, but there was a moment where I remember thinking to myself, I don't know if anybody could truly ever understand what this is like. You know, there were moments of like, wow, I feel like there's this whole storm I'm carrying on my shoulders. And I don't know if anybody really could understand this. And there was a thought, loneliness, right? Yep. And so for someone like me, you know, I'm able to identify it only because of where I've been and things I've done, and it's been a journey. But you know, but your adolescence, not so much.
Yep.
And do you think that also has a lot to do with the comparison, or thinking, you know, the outside picture? They think the picture really is supposed to look a different way. Than what it is, than what it may feel like on the inside. Like, I know my daughters have been really struggled sometimes with that decision point, as far as, here I am in high school and now I'm about to embark and be an adult. What am I going to do with my life?
Mm. Yeah. Right? Yeah, and that hasn't gotten any easier since I was in school, right? I mean,
Right.
that in the last 10, 15 years, I haven't seen the research done on this yet, and I don't know what it'll end up being, but at some point it'll be done around the impact of social media. And I'm not saying it's all bad. It's just like any other tool or device. It's how you use it, certainly. But the impact of social media on youth's mental health, the idea that you always have to have it all put together, the comparison of that person's life is better than mine too, the game that everyone plays, including myself at times, of like, why did that person's picture of a hot dog get 50 more likes than my really meaningful post about something that was near and dear to my heart, right? Like that, it's so easy to play all these different mind games and the lies that we can start telling ourselves. And especially for youth, I mean, it's hard enough at my age sometimes to process that at times, right? And so like as youth, where there's that combined with the cultural expectation of, I mean, and we're all guilty of it, like you're 16, 17, 18 years old. It's like, well, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do? Where are you going to college? What's your degree going to be in? What's your job going to be? To have it all put together, all figured out, and to have a perfect little Instagram world, it's a very tough world for adolescents. And it's no wonder that they feel like they can't be vulnerable. It's no wonder they feel like they are lonely and can't talk about it. And then that leads to everything that you said at the beginning of the show, from anxiety to depression to suicidal thoughts to opioid addiction to the list goes on.
Yeah, you think, the other thing with the social media, I think we're all interested in what are the studies going to show long term, right? Like, and so I'm 47 years old, and so I remember, when the internet first came out and the transition from there. I mean, I was looking at pictures the other day with the phone still on the wall with the cord, and I was cracking up because of how many changes I've experienced just in my generation over time. And then as technology has taken on, and it's really quite a it's weird parenting at today's age with the social media. But then the other thing about the connection is, like you said, there's a lot of good things about social media and connecting us all and having that communication. But then there is also the tendency, the effects that it can have with ADD or effects on mental illness. And then, being here all day and not looking up and connecting. And where those social skills are at. So yeah, all interesting things. I'm really glad we're talking about this today. I think it's extremely important. I think so many people are in this category, and some of them may not even be aware, maybe until listening today, like really standing back and asking themselves, and maybe someone in the audience, say, asking yourself, am I lonely? Is that part of what's going on? And is there something that I can do differently, as an individual, maybe to help that? Or if you're somebody who's really not feeling lonely, but you have a ton to give back, an organization or foundation like Only 7 Seconds can show you different ways to do that. And so we'll talk about that when we return from break, which we will be back here shortly. If you'd like to get in touch, I think you've got your website, only7seconds, is it .org or .com? I can't
.com.
remember. .com. All right. So you can definitely get in touch that way. And by the end of the show, we will be mentioning more ways in which you can get in touch with Luke and the foundation. So we will be back shortly. Thank you.
Champion your life with me, Leanne Champion, first and third Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit ChampionYourLife.com and let's do this together.
One day, I arrived early to meet a friend for lunch. One of the wait staff welcomed me with a beautiful smile. It was everyday magic. We experience this kind of thing all the time, but it was magical because the smile made me feel happy and content. The Sanskrit word for smile is smitam. It means fully blossomed, fully bloomed, and expanded, like an empty field suddenly full of spring flowers. In the same way, a bright smile given freely changes everything. It can warm the heart, It can reassure or inspire or uplift. It can bring joy or lift a burden. Try it for yourself. Smitam, a smile, and discover a little everyday magic. Join me, Sarah Main, on Damayanti, the show for your soul, where we discover everyday uplifting magic together. And check out my website, damayanti.store.
Tune into Hungry for Answers every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on transformationtalkradio.com with me, Robin Clare. I am a recovery coach, professional, and best-selling author, bringing you eye-opening conversations about addiction and groundbreaking tools for recovery. To learn about me and my offerings, visit clarity.com. That's Claire, C-L-A-R-E-I-T-Y.com.
Are limitations holding you back from living a powerful and authentic life? Are you able to see yourself and others through a lens of empathy and compassion? Tune into Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose, to discover how to free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. Second and fourth Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, YouTube, and across all podcast stations. I'm on a mission to inspire a shift in you, so together we can collectively heal the world. To learn more about me, visit RitikaRose.com.
Everyone, this is Susan Dene, and welcome back to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show, where I have special guest Luke Wall today, and we are talking about an important topic of emotional recovery with loneliness. Luke is part of an organization that helps people deal with loneliness, get them talking about it, teaching ways to connect with others, to help, I mean, essentially what we could consider a pandemic of its own. In the beginning of the show, I talked about the health-related issues that can come with loneliness, anywhere from depression, anxiety, increased numbers in Alzheimer's with the older generation. We talked about some particular age groups that are impacted significantly by loneliness, especially our youth generation, the teen years, suicide rates increasing in that category. We also talked about senior citizens. I gave an example of my elderly mom. And can you imagine? I mean, my family was personally impacted by it, Luke, but can you imagine that with the number of deaths that came from COVID and how that literally was to that generation, right? I mean, it hit the elderly significantly. I mean, imagine what that other family member, that other spouse in a lot of those situations is going through, and just that impact of those folks today. It's amazing to think, it's intense to think about that. And then we hit on another one that was kind of near and dear to my heart just because of the amount of women I've worked with. And that is middle-aged women. And that's kind of where I'm going to pick up on right now is in the middle-aged women, because one of the things when I was online and I was doing some research around this, and as I previously stated in the first part of the show, there's so much on loneliness. And you had provided some statistics also. There's just so much information about how many people are really impacted by this. And as I was looking into it, there were different categories, and I really geek out on some of this emotional recovery because it's just so significant to all of us. But one of them that it talked about was developmental loneliness. And the reason I'm thinking about the middle-aged person, and I'll say person, not just woman, but person, is, you know, the innate, and what they're talking about with the developmental loneliness is not only the innate desire for intimacy or the need to be related to others. And so sometimes in the middle-aged years, from those who are coming from divorce or who find themselves being single, I know in the recovery world, a lot of us have been through divorce for the obvious reasons. And then we recover on these emotional levels. And it's what I have found in working with others and what I personally witnessed is it's hard to find, I think, sometimes somebody to really connect on that emotional level. In that world, I like to say we become like almost emotional recovery ninjas, almost to a fault, right? Like we're so, you get us talking, it's deep all of a sudden. And so I think sometimes there's a length of singleness, like people stay single for a long time, and then you throw in the middle age and what that can open up. And this was what was really interesting about the developmental loneliness, about that need to really be, I'm going to look up exactly what they said so I don't mess it up. Individualism. you know, a loss of meaning in our life, you know, as we, you know, as we get older. And I think this comment relates to the adolescence also that we were talking about, you know, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to be? What is my meaning? You know, we're asking the age in our teen years and we're getting ready to embark on a whole new journey. We feel lonely around that. It doesn't look like somebody else. And then in the middle age category, where we've kind of lived a significant amount of our life. And then sometimes we wake up and we're like, this doesn't mean no more. Like, I'm not the same person in these later years that I was when I was 20 and I went to college or whatever. So you've got these two categories where there's definite, maybe almost like an identity crisis in a way. Would that be a good way to describe it? Where there's a search for finding out, where do I fit in? And in that search of trying to figure out, where do I fit in? What do I want to be when I grow up? I often joke, you know, I've been asking myself for a few years what I want to be when I grow up when I'm in my 40s. I mean, it can feel kind of challenging, but it feels lonely. It can feel really lonely.
Yeah.
And it can feel overwhelming, right?
Yeah, there's a number of different ways that I've read about how psychologists kind of break down elements of loneliness, and everyone mm-hmm. seems to have a little bit of different definitions or things that they're defining it as. But one of the ones that I read that kind of resonates similar to, or kind of encapsulates what you're talking about, is existential loneliness. Mm-hmm. You've heard about existential crisis, but existential loneliness, where it's that feeling of lack of purpose or meaning in your life, mm-hmm. lack of knowing where you belong or fit in the world. And then it kind of ties in with what they call social loneliness. So they're kind of, there's a little bit of a difference here, but the social being feeling a lack of belonging and not having a place where you belong. And so I think those both kind of tie into what you're saying.
And really finding, you know, finding that, you know, and so, you know, as we go into the second part of the show right now, we start talking about the solutions that people can do and how we can help others with this, right?
Yeah.
And so I was asking you at break, do you have any good stories, you know, something, an inspirational story where you literally witnessed somebody overcome, you know, the significance of loneliness, right?
Yeah. I have two, and I think I'd like to share both if I have time, but I'll start with the one that I think is really relevant to maybe you and your audience. One of the things that we've developed for our youth program is an element of storytelling, where every month that they sit in a session and they actually get to hear about someone's life story and how loneliness and connection played a role in that life experience. And actually this fall, we'll be releasing those videos publicly month over month, as well as a monthly podcast sharing these stories. And one of those stories, in fact, two of them are people that have recovered from opioid addiction. And one of them, Vic Chopra, he was on video with us and I got to hear his story directly. He's from the Seattle area, went to UW, extremely, extremely bright individual. Mm-hmm. He got addicted to opioids after one thing led to another.
Yep.
Ended up homeless. And then he ended up convicted on over 20 felony counts of identity fraud. Mm-hmm. And he was incarcerated for a number of years. And it really wasn't until, and during that time, obviously, he took from family, took from friends, he pushed, and he had no relationship with anyone by the time he was incarcerated. And it wasn't until he was incarcerated that he took the steps to reach out to a couple of his friends and a couple of his family members and start to rebuild those relationships. And those relationships kept him in recovery. And it kept him on the straight and narrow while he was incarcerated, to where now he is a remarkable human being, amazing speaker. He runs a film production agency in the Seattle area, primarily trying to give back to incarcerated people, right? And so, but it was really, truly connection that led to his recovery process. And it in the early stages of addiction, it was loneliness that led him to that place, right?
Yeah. I don't know how many times, you know, in anybody, I mean, you know, the social lubricant of alcohol and drugs, you know, we come in and sometimes with whatever's going on with us individually. And, you know, you have a drink, it loosens you up, you get to talk and you get to chit chat and, you know, and that's very much a lot of the stories. What I really loved about that story is because, you know, we were talking about that earlier in the show, but the personal responsibility that we each have to really, it's our personal responsibility to take a step of action. And it really comes down to a decision. And I always like to say, you know, in stories like his and in stories, when you hear somebody recover from that type of rock bottom, you know, I've got my story. We've all, you know, some of us who have recovered from that world, they're pretty dark stories. In the middle of that is a decision to get better. And, you know, we unfortunately sometimes have to go to the depths of rock bottom, incarceration, jails, institutions, and things like that. But what I think is really cool about, let me just finish that sentence. And you don't have to go that far down if you got a choice in there. And sometimes we don't hear that message. And that's why I really appreciate what you're doing. I know I saw on your website the reference to going into schools, going in, you know, and then you're talking about, you know, this upcoming podcast and you're talking about the, you know, hearing the stories. But I think that's why it's so important to reach out to that, even that particular group of age range of the adolescents, so that they can hear that, so that they know that you don't necessarily have to go down this road. Now I'm not saying they're all going to hear it, but they're, but if you help, you know, as you know, the saying, if I help one person in the room, and you save a life, was it worth it? Right. Was it worth it? Yeah.
And I've talked to a number of youth agencies that work in school districts that do drug and alcohol work, right? And you probably remember DARE back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah.
But what we're learning about youth is that by going into schools and say, don't do drugs, doesn't have an impact, right? Mm-hmm. And saying, don't drink alcohol, doesn't really have an impact. But if we can have kind of some of these wraparound services and conversations that are not the direct, hey, don't do this type of thing, but rather let's address some of the root causes that are causing people to turn towards addiction, that are causing them to turn towards alcohol. And so that's where there's been a high level of engagement, both directly with school districts and teachers, but also with some wraparound services and preventative services, to really engage around this conversation of loneliness, because we're learning that it is a driving factor. And if we can address it in some small ways, it oftentimes is preventative. And sometimes it's as simple as hearing a story of super smart guy, 4.0 GPA, came out as gay in high school, fabulous human being, and he got lonely, ended up addicted to opioids, and he went through 10 years of hell, right? And here, just hearing that story might inspire some kids versus just saying, don't do drugs.
Well, and doesn't that connect to what we were talking about before we went to break about the confident person, the person who's confident and competent, who everybody thinks has it together, is on the inside, you sometimes suffering tremendously. And because there is a, and I'm going to take a big leap here, but I'm just going to say it because that's what I do. But because there might be a social stigma that, hey, I'm supposed to go to school, I'm supposed to get 4.0, I'm supposed to go to college, you know, the so-called dream, you know, the way it's supposed to look, that it, there's all this pressure. So if I don't look like that, and if my feelings on the inside aren't matching what this persona, that this, you know, idealism that is false is portraying, now I feel like a piece of crap on the inside, right? Yep. And so, you know, I mean, yeah. And so the drug or the drink hits the body and all of a sudden it's like, woo.
Yeah.
Oh, that just all went away. Oh, that feels kind of good. Yeah. That feels a lot better than, you know, worrying about the pressure of college or worrying about this 4.0 or worrying if I'm fitting in or not. Right.
Yep.
I mean, it really comes back to that. Yeah.
We place a lot of false expectation on ourselves, especially youth. And if no one hears anything else today, forget even the loneliness stuff for a second. And I say that as someone who cares deeply about it.
Yeah.
Know that no one has it together, right? Like that's the reality is that, like, I mean, to the point of your, the top of your, the name of your show, right? Like, know you're crazy.
That's right.
The reality is like Nobody has it perfectly together.
That's right.
Everybody's got their stuff that they're dealing with. And certainly some people have far more different challenges than others, but it doesn't minimize the challenges you're going through.
Yeah.
Just because you maybe came from a place of wealth and family with a name and you're a star athlete doesn't mean that you have it all together and it's okay if you don't. Or you came from no family, no money, and you don't have it all together, that's okay too, right? And that I think that's, there's this false expectation that you have to live up to a certain standard. And the reality is nobody has it together as well as their Instagram looks.
That's right. That's right. I mean, yeah, we're all a hot mess in our own special way. That is why I named the show Know You're Crazy. You know, and sometimes I get a little bit slack around that, but I'm like, hey, this is not an insult. This is not a judgment. It's the exact opposite. It's saying that we all have our own lining of healing that we go through. But, you know, isn't it cool that, you know, as we're talking about social media, you know, as we're talking about the Instagram accounts, at the same time, do you think that it's becoming, I mean, I think it's becoming more acceptable to talk about these things that kids and even anybody really knows that we don't have to be a secret and that we can share about this and that we can talk about this. You know, so I was in high school, you know, 1993, I graduated. So it's always funny when age hits, you're like, oh, that's a long time ago. In my story of my recovery, I'm not going to go into that, but I will tell you, they had a speaker come in to our high school. Now, at the time when that speaker came in, I probably was 15 or 16 years old. I'd already accrued probably, 3 or 4 minor in possessions. I'd started drinking when I was 12. Like, I'm in it. Like, I'm a teenager. I'm wild. And I had the conflict, you know, the 4.0 GPA, but yet, you know, this constant partying, but I didn't think there was a problem with that. And so, but you know what I remember? I remember a guy who came in and told his story of addiction way back then. You know, isn't it funny how, like, when the things that we remember, that little did we know that seed was being planted, right? So a guy is standing up in a classroom with teenagers. This would have been in the 90s, early 90s, telling his story of recovery. Like, even as I'm telling the story right now, I can't even believe that happened. Like they did that back then, right? It was the only time I remember that ever happening or occurring. And I think, you know, but I remembered that. And I remembered that story, and that guy made an impact. Did he make me want to stop drinking that day? No, but I got it. Like I heard the story. And so as you go into these schools and you're doing your talks on loneliness, you know, that's going to be resonating on such a great level with those kids. And whether or not they, you know, can really put two and two together right then and there, it will have its impact. Like, they're going to at least know at that point that loneliness can be a problem.
Yep. I have two things that I love to say. One of them is, you don't know the impact that you can have, or don't underestimate the impact that you can have. And the impact of stories is massive. Being able to share your own personal experiences, your own stories, you're sitting here almost 30 years later and still remember that story you were told in high school, right? And it had some impact along the way, I'm sure, on either your recovery process, or at least, right, like, that's sitting back there in your brain telling you something at some point in your life. And the impact that stories can have is monumental. But also, don't underestimate the impact that you can have as an individual. And they don't have, and your story doesn't have to be, I've been in addiction and recovered, right? Like, certainly those have big impacts, but some stories are simply like, I'm a pretty regular human being that didn't get addicted to anything, and I still felt lonely as heck during different times of my life. And that resonates with a lot of people too, right? And so being able to have those conversations, to your point, I think Instagram, social media, there is a movement moving towards more conversation around these things. And thankfully, people like yourself and Transformation Talk, like, these kind of conversations continue to build brick on brick, where hopefully these conversations in 30 years from now, we're doing 10 times what we were doing now. And just like we were doing 10 times that we were back when you were in high school.
Yeah. So fill me in a little bit. So let's say I'm listening to this show today, and I am sitting here and I'm thinking, you know what, I'm pretty damn lonely. I'm thinking, you know, this is where it's been. I didn't dawn on me. Can someone like that reach out to you guys to find different solutions or, you know, tips, you know, like, are there resources that you guys can either help them with or refer them to, or even like somebody who tells their loneliness story, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So a couple of answers on that. First of all, congratulations if you're listening and are just now recognizing it. I count that as a win for us. And I say that really, truly, because I like to say that there's really kind of three steps in the loneliness process. And this isn't scientifically driven. In fact, we don't even put it out there right now. But the first step is recognizing it. And oftentimes you hear loneliness, like, oh, yeah, I kind of was lonely at one point in your life. But actually taking the time to self-reflect, recognize where you're at with it, because we oftentimes do cover it up with busyness. We talked about that tonight. We cover it up with work. We cover it up with drinking or drugs, right? Like there's so many ways that we can just kind of layer on layer, start to ignore it, but it's sitting there. And it's sitting there for all of us, some more than others. But recognizing it is a first step. And then the second one is investing in connection. As an organization at this point, don't do direct connection or direct peer support in that way. We're working towards a place that we can. We're still pretty new as an organization, but investing in connection. And I mean that really, truly in the investment piece, right? It is starting with a 7-second reach out. And you might be sitting there saying like, I don't have anyone in my closest circle. I don't have a close family or friend that I can have an intimate relationship with. That's okay. A lot of people don't, right? Mm-hmm. But is there someone that is maybe just a casual friend that might eventually become one, right? And so like start there if you have to, or start at an acquaintance level. Nobody starts out as your best friend. It all starts here and you build relationships over time. Someone recently told me that your closest relationship, the difference between closest relationship and acquaintance is miles traveled together, right? It's the time that you've spent and invested in that connection. And then the last thing I'll say is be vulnerable and curious. If you have someone that you do have a good close relationship with, or you don't, but it is kind of that middle circle, or even an acquaintance, be vulnerable and curious. Be vulnerable in the sense of the truest sense of the world of being able to share about yourself if there's capacity for that, but also be vulnerable to try new experiences. Be vulnerable to open yourself up to something that you might not normally do, whether that's getting involved in a local knitting group, to going out and rock climbing, finding places where you can connect in the community. Go to your local chamber of commerce and find out what events are going on. Go to your local youth group. Go to your local YMCA, right? Like there's a lot of group organizations in communities that it's going to take a little bit of uncomfortability for you to take that step. But take those steps, be intentional. And then whether you're lonely or you're not, it starts with a 7-second connection. Reach out to someone. Everyone has a phone now. Everyone has someone in that phone that they can send a text to or dial a phone number and spend time investing in that connection.
Yeah, those are such great tips and great suggestions to make. And so what's come into mind for me when you were saying that was, the intention and making the decision to do things differently for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and it can feel overwhelming, but I'll tell you what, I always like to tell folks, think about things that you've been through in your life and what you've overcome. You have courage within you that you just aren't tapping into right now.
Absolutely.
And for some reason, when it comes to socializing, we sometimes get, you know, we freak out a little bit, like, I can't do that or whatever, right? Like when I was talking to someone the other day, she said, you know, if she ever got back into dating, she was really like, I don't know what to say. I said, so this is just a lack of conversation skills. Well, that's easy. Let's talk about it. You know, and so we started going over different things that you would talk about and having a conversation. And so sometimes there's skills that we haven't practiced in a while, but we are telling ourselves a story that this isn't possible. And we don't even realize that that's the story we're telling us, when really we're an amazing human, you know, we're amazing. Everybody's overcome something. Even if you're an adolescent in high school, you've overcome stuff. I mean, so many children come from homes that unfortunately maybe aren't ideal, but they've overcome it and they continue to overcome it. And it's tapping into that awareness that they have it within them to make these decisions and change their life. And you are spot on. Time takes time. Yeah. Time takes time. Repetition goes a long way in building those relationships. and getting comfortable. We've all heard this probably, but getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And just realizing that that's par for the course. And then suddenly you wake up one day and you've got a list of friends, you got a list of acquaintances, and the feeling of loneliness has pretty much dissipated.
Yep.
You know, but coming back to that personal responsibility. And then also when your heart is full and you're able to give back and you take that 7 minutes and or 7 seconds and you give it back, what a fruitful way to live. And I'll end with this, you know, we've got 1 minute, we're going to be closing. And I've often thought if I could just get a bunch of people to send my mom a card, that would just lighten her, you know, light up her day. Right. And what does that take? And I'm included on that list, by the way, to be one to send the card. But, you know, we think about things like that as far as how we can give back. Okay, so how can people get a hold of you? How can they reach out to you? What are your social media? What's your contact information? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. My email is luke@onlyseconds.com. I'd be happy to hear from anyone. And go to our website, www.onlyseconds.com. There's an involvement form. There's information about the school programming. We also have programming for individuals that want to lean into this mission even more, and we'll equip and train you to live in more connected lifestyle.
Yeah, and you guys have sponsorships. I noticed there's a couple coffee shops that support you guys and what you do, and they celebrate, and you've got these fantastic signs, you know, because you matter. Those are fantastic signs, by the way. I love that. And so people can really, you know, get the word out and to contact you for anything like that. If there's somebody that really wants to give back to their community and help people in their world. So, well, thank you so much for what you do. I'm so glad you joined me. I'm glad we met each other in the park that day. Yeah, it's a fantastic mission you have. It's very important to the world. And just thanks for doing what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. And hopefully we'll have you on our podcast this fall.
I would love to. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can do that at the website, susandenee.com, D-E-N-E-E. You can email me at growthspurt@susandenee. Be more than happy to talk to you. And have a fantastic evening, everyone. You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
Crazy. Crazy.
And my name is Susan Denae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to transformationtalkradio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurt Your Life, please visit susandenee.com. That's susandenee, D-E-N-E-E.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.